Welcome back to the MLB.com StatCast podcast. I'm your host, Mike Petriello, and joining me here in New York is MLB.com national editor Matt Myers. Matt, hello. We're almost to the end of the season. We've got some really fun stuff on the show, and I know I say that every week, but this week I think especially so. We have our latest StatCast metric. We are very excited to introduce something we've been talking about on the show for a couple months now, I think. We have to obviously talk about what's going on in Cleveland, and a very exciting Hall of Fame entry from a fantastic throw we saw earlier this week. Do you want to start with a new StatCast metric? I know we've been teasing this for quite some time.
Yeah, for the dedicated listeners, you've probably sick of all the teases we've been given, but now we're here, we're ready to fully unveil our new outfielder metric. It'll be available on leaderboards, available on Baseball Savant, and lots of interesting stuff to unpack here.
So it is called Outs Above Average, and it is a range-based metric for outfielder skill, and what that really means is how good are you at collecting fly balls, and not only that, how good are you at collecting difficult fly balls. So it's a combination of the number of balls you catch or don't, and the difficulty of the balls you catch or don't. And I think the way it works is actually pretty simple. We'll start with by giving away the big name here. Byron Buxton is number one on this list. That's probably the least surprising reveal for anybody who's listened to the show. Byron Buxton is number one on our list this year of outs above average at plus 23 outs above average. So how do we get to that number? Let's just take a minute to explain how it works. As you know, if you've been listening all year, we have been putting catch probability numbers on every single batted ball to the outfield based on how much time you have, how much distance you have to go, and what direction you have to go. We can say a ball was a 10% catch probability if it was very difficult, a 99% catch probability if it was a ball any one of us listening should have caught. So if you take every single individual number for every single ball over the course of a season, and for Buxton, I think it's a little over 300 opportunities right now, and you compile them, you can come up with one total number. Now, for example, he had a fantastic 18% catch probability play where he robbed Salvador Perez of the Royals recently. Let's take a second and listen to how great that sounded.
Driven to deep right center field. Buxton with a great catch, streaking across the outfield grass to finally end the inning.
And if you watch that play, it was one of those plays where, like, you know, it was a nice play, but he made it look so easy. I think it's my favorite thing about Byron Buxton is nothing actually has to look hard because he's so fast. He's just so smooth.
He's the best. Anyone who Mike sits next to me in our cubicle, and I talk about Byron Buxton a lot.
Yeah, constantly. And as you probably remember, he is essentially tied with Billy Hamilton atop the sprint speed leaderboards for fastest man in baseball, and that makes sense. So anyway, as we said, that catch that you just heard was 18% catch probability. So what happens is that since he caught it, he gets a plus 0.82. That's the remainder from the total of 100. But if he missed it, he wouldn't get hit with that amount because it was a difficult catch. He wasn't really supposed to catch it. He'd only get a minus 0.18. And you can compile that for every single play over the course of the season. You know, here's a plus 99 there, here's a minus 0.35 there, and on and on and on. And you get your total number. So the range for the moment is Byron Buxton plus 23 is number one. The lowest guys at the bottom are like minus 10, minus 14. So there's about a 40 out difference between the elite and the bottom end. And I think the names aren't terribly going to surprise you for the most part, right?
But I mean, when you think about it, like, that's a lot.
That
you know,
is a lot.
So like when you just take a step back, okay, you know, Byron Buxton's at the top of the list, plus 23. Bottom of the list, Matt Kemp, minus 14. So that's basically 40 outs. Now, if you transfer that and you think about a batter, like, that's 40 more outs. Like, if you just said, like, let's say you were just looking two hitters, you said, well, this guy in the same amount of playing time made 40 more outs at the plate. And before you even get into extra bases or saved extra bases and home runs, et cetera, like, that's a huge difference.
And I think it might actually be like 50. Like, yeah, there's two more weeks in the season, but also, you know, Kemp missed some time this year. So he probably would have been a little bit, I think last year he was actually minus 26 because he played the full season. Buxton has played most of the season, but he's also missed some time. And I think, you know, at the end of the season, it might end up being like a span of 50 outs.
And of course, I mean, we are talking about the extremes here. Sure. You know, there's a lot of players who are really bunched in sort of the plus five, minus five range, but even still 10 outs is,
yeah,
it's significant.
It's not nothing. So if you look at the top 10, and as Matt said, you can find these leaderboards both in individual and team form, which I think people like, at baseballsavant.com. Byron Buxton number one, unsurprising. Number two, Ender Inciarte. That's not surprising at all. Plus 17. We talk about him a lot. Mookie Betts, Lorenzo Cain, Jackie Bradley, all in the top five. That all makes perfect sense. I really like Kevin Kiermaier here, and we're going to get to why in just a second. But Kevin Kiermaier is tied with Jackie Bradley for number five at plus 11. Now, obviously, Kevin Kiermaier is fantastic, but he missed 2 months with a broken hip this year. This is it's like hitting home runs. You have to be in the lineup to accumulate these stats. Now, there is a way we're going to get to in a second where you can look at it on a more rate-based way to look at it. So that takes out the playing time. But when I look at this list, for the most part, you know, it makes sense. Jason Hayward, Billy Hamilton, Odubel Herrera. I do like Adam Engel on this list. Now, Adam Engel is probably not a name most people know. I first started noticing him, he plays for the White Sox, when he showed up as like the 11th best overall sprint speed guy. I never really heard much about him, and I saw him elite sprint speed. And now here he is, pretty high up on our outs above average list. I do remember he made an incredible home run robbery a couple weeks ago, so I'll buy it. But I do like being able to, you know, learn something new about a guy you don't think about too much. Adam Engel seems like a really good center
for
field.
Sure. He's a very interesting player. This guy's gonna, you know, combine his pure speed with his defense. This guy's gonna have a roster, assuming, you know, his speed is intact. He'll have a roster spot for a while.
I also like on our top 15 that Matt and I each get one of like our giant air quotes, our guys on the list, tied at plus 7 outs above average. Keon Broxton over here, Jerod Dyson over there. So it's kind of an interesting, you know, thing you have to thread where it's like, most of these guys you probably thought were good outfielders, but also if you had a new metric that said that, you know, Nelson Cruz was the best outfielder in baseball, that's not going to make much sense either. So I think that that's really cool. And if you can go check out the leaderboards, you are welcome to do that. We also have team leaders. The Twins right now are plus 29 outs above average, and it's not entirely because of Buxton. It's mostly because of Buxton. Max Kepler is plus 7. That's pretty good. Zach Granite is plus 3. Also pretty good. And I remember they were not a very good outfield defense last year at all because Miguel Sano was out there. I think one of the Arcia brothers was out there. And we predicted before the season, this is going to be the best outfield in baseball, and that's one prediction that has completely come right.
You want to know a fun fact about Zach Granite?
I can't wait.
He's from Staten Island and is a youth baseball teammate of MLB.com's Joe Trezza.
I wish you could all see like the excitement on Matt's face to have that Zach Granite stat. And then the other teams on the list, you know, the Twins are number one, Red Sox number two. That makes perfect sense. The Rays, the Mariners, the Reds, and the Royals. Those are probably six or so of the teams I would have guessed to be the top six. So that's great. It kind of aligns with the eye test in this case.
Yeah, and I'll give Mike a little tout because he early preseason he wrote a story basically saying the Twins were going to have the most improved defense and arguably the best outfield defense in baseball. And sure enough, here they are number one. When you're looking for reasons why they've managed to stay in the playoff chase, and if the season ended today, they would be in the playoffs. Outfield defense is a big factor because for the Twins, they've always been a team that really has, they've always been an outlier in like the strikeout revolution where they have always had a team that didn't really have a lot of strikeout pitchers. Obviously, Jose Berrios changes that a little bit, but still they're putting out a lot of guys who aren't putting up big K numbers, but they're counterbalancing that with an elite outfield defense. The Mariners were another team that made a lot of changes this offseason with outfield defense in mind, and we see that manifesting itself in the leaderboards.
And that's pretty exciting. Now, as I said, the Red Sox were number two because Betts and Jackie Bradley are both in the top five. A quick note on wall balls, because if you've been watching our, you know, five stars, four stars catch probability plays, Andrew Benintendi has been kind of getting killed all year because we haven't really accounted for the Green Monster very well. Also, a new change that you'll find on Baseball Savant is we are accounting for those wall balls. This is the step one of this process, right? So what we're doing is any batted ball that is within 8 feet of the wall, we're counting as a wall ball. And if you catch it, great, you get the credit for that. And if you don't, we'll take that out of the sample and you don't get hit for it. Because Andrew Benintendi was getting a whole bunch of balls that were like 12 feet up the wall that obviously no human being was going to catch, and he was getting hit for that. So that is our step one fix for now. So this makes Andrew Benintendi look a lot better. And then over the winter, we have an idea of how to actually put those back in, I think, in a more thoughtful way by kind of making two separate groups of batted balls. So we actually also compared the performance of Red Sox left fielders at home versus visitors at home. And the visitors are actually a plus in Fenway once we took out the wall balls. And Red Sox left fielders was still a slight minus. So I think that works for now. And we'll work to keep improving that. Something else I want to talk about for this. So outs above average, as I said, it's a counting stat, and you need to play a lot to be well-regarded. But what happens if there are guys who don't necessarily play every day? Like Kiermaier was injured. A lot of these guys aren't necessarily full-time starters. If you also look at the leaderboards at baseballsavant.com, you'll see a couple columns, expected catch percentage, actual catch percentage, and catch percentage added. And this is how you would look for guys who haven't really played every day and you just want to see, like, on a rate basis, how good have they been? So let me just define what those mean. Expected catch percentage is based on the batted balls that are hit to you, based on the difficulty of batted balls that were hit to you, what would an average major league outfielder catch? So I am not a major league outfielder. I'm terrible. But if I stood in center field every day, there would be some amount of batted balls that were hit to me with some amount of difficulty. The major league average is 84%. So let's say I'm playing center field. The average expected catch percentage of balls that were hit to me would be, a major league outfielder, an average major league outfielder would be expected to make 84% of those plays. The actual catch percentage is how many plays you did actually make. So for me, that would probably be zero. But the actual average is also 84% because that's the way it works. So as an example here, Jason Hayward, very good outfielder. Denard Span, below average outfielder. They have each had an expected catch percentage based on the difficulty of balls hit to them at 85%. So in terms of difficulty, they've had basically the exact same opportunities. Hayward's actual catch percentage, 89%. So he's added plus 4 points of value. Denard Span, 81%. He's subtracted 4 points of value. And that's a pretty good proxy for who's getting easy and difficult batted balls.
Yeah, and we didn't mention before, but Span, now that you know this, you won't be surprised to find out, is sort of in the Matt Kemp section at the bottom of the leaderboard.
And they've already said he won't be their center fielder next year. Like, he's going to play in a corner probably for the Giants next year. But I think that's cool. So this allows for guys who haven't played every day to really shine. So a guy we see a lot here in New York when he's healthy is Juan Lagares. I think he passes every eye test. Juan Lagares is a fantastic outfielder. He's just rarely healthy enough to play every day. So he's only played 71 games in the outfield this year, about half the season based on where we are right now. If you were to just look at outs above average, he's plus four. So that's pretty good. Tied for 21st out of 118 guys with 100 opportunities. He just hasn't played enough to really compile more than that. If you were to look at his catch percentage added, which basically takes the difficulty of balls he's gotten and how much he's actually performed, he's plus 4 points there, going from 85% to 89%. That actually ties him for fifth. So that's a really good way to look at it for a guy who hasn't played all that much. And then you have a guy like Buxton, who is tops both in the rate basis and the cumulative basis because Byron Buxton is fantastic. So I thought it was cool. This is, in terms of the outs above average, it's not dissimilar to what you're used to in terms of like DRS and UZR. But what this is cool with the expected catch percentages is you can really get a pretty good proxy for, are you getting difficult opportunities or not? Because even Byron Buxton can't make a great play on a play that's not there. Right?
Yeah. And one important thing to also remember that, like, when you think about this in the context of DRS or UZR, is that this is outs. Those are measuring runs. So it's like, don't confuse the raw numbers themselves as a straight up comparison. Now, DRS has a plus minus component, and when they calculate it, those all go into create a runs or that final like runs number, but this is outs. It's important to keep that in mind.
Correct. That's totally fair. And another reminder is that this is actually just the range component of it. So we're not considering throwing errors. We're not considering overrunning ground balls like Kevin Kiermaier turned a ball in an inside the park home run. It's just tracking down fly balls, which is the most important part of playing outfield defense. So as we said, the expected catch percentage, the major league average is 84%. Most guys are between 80 and 88%. If you were to look at the guy of these 118 outfielders with 100 opportunities, who has the highest expected catch percentage? It's Mike Trout, which I find really interesting. He has a 90% expected catch percentage. So based on the difficulty of balls hit his way, I imagine an average major league outfielder would catch 90% of them. That's really high. And that kind of goes a little bit into why he has not made fantastic plays this year. He has 0 5-star catches. He has 0 4-star catches. Now, it's also fair to say he's underperformed that a little bit. His expected was 90%, but his actual is 88%. So he's underperformed that slightly. But even so, he's not really had the opportunity to make all these amazing catches. And I think that's got to go into the discussion a little bit, right? Especially as MVP season's coming up.
So you're basically saying Mike Trout is trash now.
Wow. We're not usually, we don't usually traffic in hot takes on this show, but that might be the most scorching one we've ever had.
I've been watching too much of The Grill.
The Grill.
From Cespedes Family Barbecue. It's osmosis. It's seeping in. No, it is interesting because, Trout has had a lot of reasons to be in the highlights this year when he's been healthy, leading the majors with weighted runs created plus of 189, I believe I saw this morning, and number two is like 165. It gets kind of crazy. It's like, slight sidebar, it's crazy how good Mike Trout is.
Insane how good he is.
I've said this for a while. I don't think I'm alone in saying this. He's underrated.
He's absolutely underrated. He's underrated. He's the best player of our generation and maybe the best player we'll ever see.
But this year on defense, it's been a weird one because he's not making great plays, but partially that's because he hasn't really gotten opportunities to make great
plays. Yeah, it's a little bit of both. And so whether that's positioning, whether it's batted ball luck, whether it's the Angels pitching, I don't know, that stuff we're still working on. So anyway, that's really exciting. Outs Above Average is available at baseballsavant.com. Please check it out because I think you'll really enjoy it. Some other things we want to talk about. But first, a question. Do you love baseball? If you're listening to this, of course you do. So take the thrill of controlling on your roster and smacking one out of the park with you everywhere you go with the number one baseball game on mobile, Tap Sports Baseball 2017. Please go to the iTunes or Google Play App Store right now to download it today for free and start building your ultimate roster. Now, we are going to get to our Hall of Fame play in a minute because it's super fun, but you may have noticed Cleveland Indians have won 21 straight games, which, for the record, is not the Major League record. It's the American League record. The Major League record remains 26 from the 1916 New York Giants, who are in the midst of a 31-game homestand. I can't even begin to explain to you why we know so much about the 1916 New York Giants, but we do, and that is the record, even though there was a tie in the middle. It was a rainout. The darkness, whatever. It got replayed, and they won.
Yes, I spent much of Wednesday educating myself about the 1916 Giants, and it is a little bit of a misnomer to call it a tie because it never doesn't show up in the standings, and the game was actually replayed the next day as part of a doubleheader, and the Giants won both games. So I think it is an interesting discussion, but I think the fact that the game was actually replayed, like, makes it clear why that it should be rightfully considered the record.
I agree, but for right now, there's no dispute that the Cleveland Indians have the American League record, 21 wins, and they may have played another game by the time you hear this. Now, whether they win or not, it's still an amazing stretch. We do have to have some numbers around this stretch, right? So at the moment, they've won 21 straight games dating back to August 24th. In that span, they have outscored their opponents 139-25, which is obscene. Now, I just had something interesting this morning, right? We looked at their expected weighted on base. So the quality of contact and strikeouts and walks that their pitchers have allowed. Unsurprisingly, they're number one, right? But they're not number one by a lot. I was expecting like a 40-point gap here, and that's really not.
Yeah, I was sort of expecting this, are you ready for your mind to be blown? But since the streak started on August 24th, their expected weighted on base against their pitchers, and like their pitchers, I mean, Carrasco and Kluber alone, the two of them have each made four starts in the streak, and have a combined strikeout walk ratio of like 58-3. If I'm off, it's by one or two, not like an exaggeration. Like, their pitching's been insane. The expected weighted on base against is .268, which is very impressive. League average is like .320.
Yeah.
But the Brewers are .275 and the Rays are .277.
So not a big gap.
The quality of contact, and this includes walks and strikeouts, they're teams that are like in their league over the last 24 games from a pitching perspective.
Yeah, and so unsurprisingly, you can look at the gap right between the expected weighted on base and the actual, and that gives you a good performance of whether, you know, they're being fortunate, whether they're getting everything they've earned. Unsurprisingly, they have the largest gap between expected and actual. Yes, their expected is number one, but their actual is like super number one. There's a 26-point gap, and I think it's important to point out they've done this with zero innings from Andrew Miller, and they've done this with Danny Salazar has been up and down, right? So it's been basically not just basically.
I think the fact that them winning 21 straight games with Andrew Miller on the DL is probably the most
enough attention.
It's sort of hard to fathom. Like, it's sort of whatever the odds of a 21-game winning streak by the Indians are, and you calculated this the other day when it was at like 18.
Yeah.
Now it's probably at like, you know,
a billion. I don't know.
Like, you should add another like billion onto it for the absence of Andrew Miller.
I mean, the story of the 2016 Cleveland run of the World Series, if you had to pick one name, it's probably Andrew Miller.
Yeah.
And he's not even been a part of this, which is ludicrous. They have the fifth lowest hard hit percentage. They have the second fewest barrels allowed to, wait for it, the Mets. How did that happen? I don't know. I'm actually kind of stunned by that. Now, as you said, you expected the pitching to be kind of wildly ahead of everybody, and they're not. Here's where this happens. The hitting, it is, right? So the batting, expected weighted on base, or as we said, the league average is around .320. Cleveland is at .370 during this span. Second place, Oakland, .343. Now, there's the gap I think we were looking for. Oakland's been pretty good. Matt Olson, Matt Chapman, and everybody. But then Kansas City, number three. I mean, these are huge gaps that we're talking about here. They have basically everything you would want an offense to do, they're doing. They have the second lowest strikeout rate in the streak, 17%, second only to Kansas City. They have the highest hitting hard hit percentage at 42%. They have the most barrels at 52. The next is 40.
That's a big gap.
Now, here's my favorite one. We're looking at all this on a team basis, so I looked at this on a player basis. Since the streak began on August 24th, we've had 420 hitters with at least 10 plate appearances. If you rank them from 1 to 420 in expected weighted on base, the Indians have, when we count this, 7 of the top 25 guys here. Some would be expected, right? Jose Ramirez has been unbelievable. Lindor has been fantastic. Carlos Santana, Edwin Encarnacion. There's a couple other guys you might not expect. Number four on the list is Eric Gonzalez, who is an infield prospect who's just never been able to find any playing time here. Jason Kipnis can't even play in this infield. He's been red hot. Roberto Perez, backup catcher. Every time I turn on a Cleveland game, I see him hitting a home run. That's happened like three times to me in the last week.
It felt that way in the postseason last year, yeah, too, somehow.
That's exactly right. And then number 25 on the list, which is a name I've liked for a long time, is Yandy Diaz, who is a third baseman. And I remember Yandy Diaz from earlier in the year. We looked at him. He wasn't productive, but he was really high in the exit velocity. So if there's anybody in baseball, you'd say, this guy needs to elevate, and he's going to hit 40 home runs. It's Yandy Diaz.
I think he leads the league in biceps above replacement. I mean, he's pretty ripped.
We'll have to talk to Tom Tango and get that to be a metric. So anyway, the point is, you already know Cleveland's been unbelievable, but there's 25 different things that have to happen to get to this. And the fact that they're doing it without Andrew Miller, and I don't want to say it's mostly the bats because the rotation's been great, but it does feel like the bats have been a little more overwhelming.
For sure. It's been fun to watch. And now that, I mean, it's when you watch their games, it's like, well, they're obviously, they're not going to, they've led for, it's like 198 innings and they've trailed at the end of five of them.
That's obscene.
It's crazy.
Have they peaked too early? Next time on Hot Takes.
Yeah, more Hot Takes. So time for the Hall of Fame.
And now it's time to induct a new player into the StatCast Hall of Fame this week, presented by Tap Sports Baseball 2017. Maybe the least likely of our Hall of Fame inductees so far, Brett Phillips of the Milwaukee Brewers on Wednesday night unleashed a 104-mile-an-hour throw, and not only that, it was an 8-2 double play to get David Freeze. Let's listen to that for 1 second.
In the air, center field, Phillips has a great arm, tagging a third on his way. Here comes a throw, and the slide, the tag, he's out! Oh, what a throw! Brett Phillips with the bazooka for a right arm.
So 104 miles an hour, if that sounds really good, it is very good. It is the hardest throw of 2017. Now, it's not the hardest assist. It's not the hardest. It's the hardest throw that we have tracked of 2017. And that's really impressive because it's also the second hardest assist on record behind, obviously, Aaron Hicks' 105.5 from last season. And if you look at Phillips, he has two of the eight hardest throws that we've ever tracked. He has in his career played 22 games and 104.1 innings. So I think it's pretty clear to say that's a skill that he has.
Yeah, I watched the highlight last night, and it was like a perfectly timed the ball was in the air, and like as like Phillips is like lining up to catch it, the announcer's like, he's got a great arm, and like sure enough, an absolute hose to throw David Freeze at home. It was quite something, and of course. It was pretty funny. The MLB Pipeline Twitter account tweeted out the highlight, and they tweeted out, it's Brett Phillips' 70 grade arm was on display as he unleashed the strongest throw in MLB this season. And then Phillips responded and said, I think I can do better. How hard would I have to throw it next time to get an 80 grade?
I think this is an 80 grade. Like we are unofficially elevating this to an 80 grade. He has the two hardest throws of the season. He is the second hardest assist on record. He's barely played.
If we're talking just about arm strength, yes, this is 80 grade. This is 80 grade arm strength. Whether or not you want to factor in accuracy, well, that's a separate discussion. Arm strength, purely, this is an 80, and this is we've talked about this before. With guys, we talked about this with Ahmed Rosario recently, where guys come up from the minors, they're prospects, and scouts are giving them grades, and then we can actually legitimately put a objective number on it and basically say, well, actually, this guy's in the 98th percentile of this skill. He's actually, an 80 grade.
If that's not an 80, I don't know what an 80 is. And I was thinking about Phillips as I kind of looked this up this morning. He was part of this trade. It feels like we keep coming back to this same trade between Houston and Milwaukee. He was drafted by the Astros, and he was traded to Milwaukee in 2015 with Josh Hader, who's been fantastic, and Adrian Hauser as a prospect, and Domingo Santana, who's now their starting right fielder, for Mike Fiers and Carlos Gomez. Now, Gomez kind of flamed out there. Fiers has been fine. But that's a trade that, if you're looking at how Milwaukee has gotten back into contention, this sure seems like it's going to be one of those deals. Santana's got 24 home runs, 368 on base, 42 slugging. Josh Hader, 50 strikeouts in 37 innings, 195 ERA.
And to walk it back a second, that deal only happens because the Mets did not pass the Carlos,
like the Flores trade.
The Carl, they were going to trade Carlos Gomez was going to be traded to the Mets for Wilmer Flores and Zach Wheeler, and the Mets nixed it because they didn't like Gomez's medical. And then 2 days later, he gets traded, gets sent in this trade that brought back that big haul for the Brewers. I mean, the Mets did the Brewers a favor by nixing that trade.
Well, because that trade fell through, if I'm getting the timeline right here, then they went out and got Cespedes.
Yes, and they traded Michael Fulmer for Cespedes.
Right.
It's sort of funny to look back 2 years later, like how many of these players have become like big like parts of like what the narrative of the season
and,
right
now. If they get Gomez instead of Cespedes, they probably don't go to that World Series.
They certainly don't go to that World Series. They don't make the playoffs.
Right.
Like,
so that one trade has changed an enormous amount of recent baseball history. So anyway, welcome to the Hall of Fame, Brett Phillips. We apologize if anybody else says you have a 70-grade arm. Here at StatCast, you have an 80-grade arm in our eyes. So welcome to the StatCast Hall of Fame. And that is our StatCast Hall of Fame play for the week, brought to you by Tap Sports Baseball 2017. Go to the iTunes or Google Play App Store right now to download it today for free. Start building your ultimate roster. And that is our show for this week. We will catch you next week. This is the MLB.com StatCast podcast.